Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Toronto-born Amy Sky is an award-winning singer-songwriter with 12 CDs to her credit. Her 13th CD was released in 2022 as a duet project with her husband Mark Jordan. In 2016 saw the release of two new CDs, Twilight Rose, a collection of original Hebrew spiritual world music, and Live On, a collaboration with Olivia Newton-John and Beth Nielsen-Chapman of songs to support those seeking healing from loss. A prolific and multi-talented artist, Amy has written for herself and for dozens of other international recording stars, such as Anne Murray, Reba McEntire, Diana Ross, Hart, Cliff Richard, and Aaron Neville. Amy also produces albums for herself and others. Amongst her production work are five projects for Olivia Newton-John, including the critically lauded Grace and Gratitude, the award-winning La Voice for Mark Masry, and several children's albums for Fisher-Price. Amy is currently focusing on writing the book, music, and lyrics for a new musical based on an original story she created. It is called Beyond the Musical, along with co-writers Steve McKinnon and Annabelle Fitzsimmons. Prior to Beyond, her first major theatrical writing credit was co-lyricist and music writer on Fly High, a show that was optioned and developed by Broadway producers Junkyard Dog. Winner of three SOCAN Awards and an American Songwriting Award, Amy has also been nominated for four Juno Awards, Best New Artist, twice for Best Songwriter, and Best Adult Contemporary Album for her latest release with her husband, Mark Jordan. Amy has also been recognized for her work as a mental health advocate and is an award-winning entrepreneur. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Amy Sky. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. I'm in Toronto, Canada right now.
I've been to Toronto. A friend of mine, when I was coming to visit, she said, the only times of year I'm allowed to come are June, July, August, because the rest of the year's weather's horrible.
You know, I wouldn't say it's horrible right now, but if you like warm weather, it's not the place to be.
Lovely. So, Amy, so let's rewind to the very beginning. At what age did you think, cool, whether it was a child or teenager, I want to be in the music world industry? And how did that journey progress to where we are today? I know it's multiple years. So the hybrid Amy story.
Well, it's always been music for me. When I was young, I was a classical musician. I was a cellist and I just wanted to be making music. And it wasn't until I was a teenager that the idea of doing pop music was on the horizon. And I was still kind of split. I went to university, have a degree in classical theory and composition. But during the day, I was studying that. And the night, I was in a rock band and writing songs. And by the time I got out of university, I definitely knew I wanted to be a singer-songwriter. And I got a gig singing backup vocals with a very famous American rockabilly artist named Rompin' Ronnie Hawkins, who was based out of Toronto. And we toured in the Southern United States, and I got discovered in Nashville and signed to a publishing deal at the age of 23. And that's really what, you know, kickstarted my career into the pop music world. And that's what I've been doing ever since, both writing songs for other people and for myself. I always wanted to be the artist making records, but I always also wanted to have other people record my songs.
When you were catapulted after you signed your deal, did you realize or have an intention of, cool, I want to be famous? Or was it just like, okay, let's just see how things go?
You know, I think I remember being 15 and talking to a friend and realizing that I just sort of knew I was going to be in the public eye. And I always wanted to perform. But what I'll tell you what was the biggest influence on me. When I was 11, I got a copy of Carole King's Tapestry and James Taylor's Sweet Baby James. And I saw that Carole King had her own record and James Taylor was doing one of Carole King's songs. And I was like, Oh, you can do both.
Okay.
Always wanted to write. I think the writing was always more interesting to me than the performing. So I just wanted to have my, I just wanted to write songs, and I wanted to have the chance to sing them, but I was always just as thrilled to have other people sing them. So it was just about getting my songs out there.
You mentioned that you write songs for yourself and for other artists. So when you're creating these songs, is it always as a singular person or do you collaborate with others?
I do both.
Okay.
I had the great honor of being signed to what's called a staff writer deal from 23 to 36. I had publishing deals all around the world where I was required to turn in 20 songs a year that could be exploited either by myself or other people.
Okay.
And sometimes I'd write by myself for myself. A lot of times I'd write with other writers because it's a great way to just, collaboration is a wonderful process in writing. But often I would also write with the artists themselves. I'd be called in and they might have an idea they wanted to start, or they didn't have any idea and they just wanted someone to help them, get their vision for the record out there. So I've done every single combination possible.
Now, when you're writing, whether it's, I'm sure it'll be slightly different for you when it's by yourself compared to with others. What is the motivation? What inspires it? Is it easy every time? Let's unpack your creative brain.
Ideas can come from a lot of different places. For me, what gets my brain going is when I get a title. I get a title for a song. That's where I start from. I was actually taught that my first publishing deal was in Nashville.
Okay.
And when the title is right for me, I know the whole story. And
Okay.
I generally start with lyrics away from an instrument in many, many cases. I'm out for a walk. That seems to be where I get my ideas. I go out for a walk and my brain is kind of, skittering all around. And then about 20 minutes into the walk, ideas start coming. I always have something to record on. These days, of course, iPhones are easy. The
Yes.
old days, it used to be a cassette recorder. And then phrases come to me in, kind of in a rhythm and like almost like poetic meter. And, all based around the idea of the title. And if you look at the titles of my songs from all of the different records that I've done, you have a pretty good idea from the title what the song's going to be about.
Okay.
There's never generally a title that's like you and me. Like it's if my heart had wings or
Yes.
love, pain, and the whole damn thing. It's there's a story. And I
Yeah.
also learned that in Nashville. But there are times if I'm collaborating with a musical person, sometimes we'll get in a room and they'll put up a groove, or sometimes somebody might even offer me a melody. I've just finished two Christmas songs. I'm writing songs to pitch to Christmas movies right now,
Okay.
believe it or not. This is the time of year when you do that.
Yeah.
And I'm collaborating with an artist named Stefan Macchio over some of his instrumental piano pieces. So the melody was already written. So in that case, I'm just writing lyrics to a melody. But for me, if I'm the person that started the process, I like to start with the title.
When you're creating a song, do you always know, okay, cool, this song is going to be for me, and this, or this song is going to be another artist? Do you attack them in that idea? Or sometimes it overlaps. You think a song is going to be for you, and then it actually ends up for being for someone else.
I'd say most of the time I write as if I was going to record it
Okay.
because what how I know if a song's going to touch people is if it moves me, if it connects, if it gives me goosebumps. So I'm telling a story or a narrative that is something I'm trying to work out in life or consider, because then it's got an emotional core. And what I would say, very rarely do I set out specifically to write for another person, but often what'll happen is I might get with an artist and they'll like a song and we might change lyrics to suit their take on the world. Something that comes to mind is when I wrote with the band Heart. I wrote a bunch of songs that were kind of in a very rootsy style. I was writing them on guitar, and so they connected with them. They were sort of bluesy, but when we got together to actually collaborate, they heard two of the songs, Voodoo Doll and Cherry Blossom Road, and they liked the narrative, but they said, like, I wouldn't say this. I wouldn't say it like that. I would say it like this. And so we tailored the lyrics to suit their persona. If I'm sitting in a room with an artist, like from the top, then yes, then of course I might have some titles with me, but like I will get input from them. Like, what are they interested in? What kinds of things do they like talking about? What wouldn't they talk about? What's their vocal range? You take all those things into consideration in the room with someone else, but on my own, I generally write as if I'm the artist who's going to sing it.
You've referenced emotions and you've referenced sort of words. So I'm diving into this. I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. There are three different types: visual, auditory, kinesthetic. We each have a dominant one, a secondary and tertiary one. Visual people create pictures. Auditory people, it's around the words, sentences and paragraphs. And kinesthetic people, it's around the body language, emotion, tone of voice, and so forth. So focusing in your world specifically on music, not other areas of your life, because you might be in your secondary or tertiary when you're in the music space. So when you're listening to music of your own or about the artist, are you creating pictures? Are you hearing the words, or is it about the emotion and feeling?
You know, that's really interesting because I'm married to a singer-songwriter, Mark Jordan, and he is also a visual artist. And everything that he writes is picture, 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 picture. And until I met him, I was very much focused on, let's say number two and number three, words and emotions. But I would say, but since, and I've been influenced by his ability to paint pictures, and I try and incorporate that to tell a visual story. But for me, I think the core of it is, it starts with, am I emotionally communicating something that's real? And then I try and find interesting ways to say that. I'm a word person. I do a lot of writing outside of music as well, but I never take off the table the ability to paint a picture. If at all possible, I like to paint a picture as well, but not, and I'm also a Libra, so I'm two-brained, so I'm both linear and non-linear, so I dabble in all areas.
And now, when you're listening to music by other artists, are you able to just relax, enjoy, or is your creative, technical brain unpacking what's happening as you're listening?
My technical brain is unpacking as I'm listening.
Okay.
Almost always. In fact, people are always like, oh, I want to see this person in concert and that person in concert. I'm like, it's generally not enjoyable for me. Like, it's because I'm just too busy thinking about all the technical stuff and imagining what I would do in that situation. And then a lot of times in the middle of a concert, I get an idea for a song and then I'm off writing a song in my head.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work you do. I love the journey of the choice, the journey of the receiving, the unpacking, the listening to songs 1 to 10 or 1 to 15, so forth. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and albums or vinyls are making a big comeback. The vinyls in this last year alone in the UK, 5.9 million sales, the biggest since 1990. But then we've also got these digital platforms whereby people consume music on. What is your observation and perceptions of the landscape currently?
I think it's fascinating that people are gravitating back towards physical product. I know both our kids are singer-songwriters, Zoe Sky Jordan, she's in Los Angeles, and Ezra Jordan's in Nashville, and they press vinyl of their of their works. I haven't pressed vinyl of mine. I don't know that my demographic is into the vinyl, but I still have CDs. I still sell CDs. Absolutely. And I appreciate that you appreciate that a CD is created as an art form, that with a beginning, middle, and end, and even the amount of spacing between songs is something that you think about and decide on as a whole work.
I know you've collaborated with the late Dame Olivia Newton-John. So how did that collaboration and projects come to be?
I first met Olivia when I was living in Los Angeles in the mid-80s, and as I mentioned before, I had a was a staff writer. Was I writing for? I was writing for Warner Chappell at that point, and she was making her first album after having given birth to her daughter Chloe, and she was taking that time in her life. She had so much pop success. I mean, literally, she was 37, but she had already had 20 years of pop success. But she broke through very early, and she had a lot of song ideas that she wanted to bring into the world. So she wanted to make an album that was about some of the things that concerned her about the state of the world. And she reached out to her lawyer to ask him if he knew any female songwriters she could collaborate with. And her lawyer was partner to my lawyer. And so they put us together. And so we wrote a couple of songs on her album. Let's Talk About Tomorrow. I'm sorry, that was the song we wrote. Let's Talk About Tomorrow. The album was called Rumor. And we also wrote another song called Winter Angel, which was a B-side for that album. And but we became friends, and we really enjoyed each other's company. A few years after that album, she went back home to Australia. I went back home to Canada, and we lost touch physically, although we would speak occasionally. And we didn't see each other again till 2004, when she came to Toronto to play a concert. And I went to see her, and after the concert, she told me that she was looking for empowering anthems for women, and would I come to LA to write with her? Because she was doing an album that time for Hallmark, a themed album to support Breast Cancer Month. So we wrote some songs for that. And in the process of that, one of the songs I wrote for her for that album. Oh, actually, I didn't actually write for it. I had written it, and I brought it to, I submitted it to her for that album, because it perfectly fit in with the album. It was a song called Serenity, based on the Serenity Prayer. And she loved that song so much. She'd already been on her cancer journey and, done a lot of that spiritual work that you do when you need to embrace life and choose life and also choose everything life offers you. And she said, I've always wanted to do a meditation project, and I think you'd be the person to do that with. And so that our next project was Grace and Gratitude, which was written to act as a contemplative set of songs that you use the healing energy of music to bring peace to people. And that album was just a revelation for both of us. I'd never made a full-length new age album before, neither had she, and we loved it. And we came up, we wrote, it was so easy. It came together so quickly. And the fans just loved that soundscape, and they loved her voice in the lower register. So the next album that we did together was a, she was asked to do a Christmas album, but we used the same sonic landscape, very kind of new age meditative. So that became kind of the signature for us. And then we just loved working together. And also I, at that point in my career, I had young kids, and I didn't want to travel as much. I have the ego energy of focusing on myself. So I really wanted to get back into songwriting for others and producing. I loved being in control of a project from beginning to end, and making all the creative choices. And I asked her if I could produce, Grace and Gratitude, and it worked out so well that I then produced another five or six projects for her.
And I must say, Grace and Gratitude is one of my favorite CDs. I've got the original, and I think there was a deluxe or another version. And I just want to say, it has had so much healing for me in myself and my process. So I just want to say thank you for that project because it's absolutely brilliant and beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you for, for appreciating it. And well, one of the intentions of that project was we wanted to pay homage to all of the great wisdom traditions in the world. And so we consciously chose some, some Christian words, some Hebrew words, some Tibetan Buddhism and Japanese Buddhism. And we wanted it people to feel seen and included in the whole process. And I don't know if you're a fan of Grace and Gratitude, you might also know that we used the theme for the lyric cycle, which was the sacred wisdom of the chakras. though each song based on one of the sacred truths of the chakras. So that if you know anything about chakras, they start at the base of your energy systems, that start at the base of your spine and go all the way through the top of your head. So it, we wanted it to be a whole body, whole soul healing experience and are so gratified that that's what people felt from it. I'm curious in what it, how did you discover Grace of Gratitude?
I was on Amazon and I was looking at the time, new releases by Olivia. And I saw it and I ordered it from Amazon and I played it. And I was actually, I'm not sure if you know Brandon Bays, The Journey. So I was actually doing my accreditation with Brandon Bays during, in 2000, a couple of years later, 2005. And I did that. And then I also did my Reiki master course after that. So it just was in the perfect space and the perfect time that those two, the music and the energy and the experiences all combine.
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely the space we're in. And to be honest, I mean, I don't mind sharing a little even more backstory of how that project came about. Olivia's, you know, had a longtime partner, Patrick, who had that very unfortunate accident. He just disappeared off a fishing boat.
Yes.
And when we were working on the Stronger Than Before album, which I think was 2004, I get the dates mixed up, but I think it's 2004. Patrick was still alive and he was also the one who loved the song Serenity. And he was encouraging Olivia to do more of spiritual kind of music, more high vibration music. We had talked about doing that while Patrick was still alive. And then he disappeared. And Olivia, of course, you know, went into her grieving journey. And she was, I think there's nothing worse than grieving someone that you don't know what happened to them. It was very, very traumatic. And so she was writing me, you know, we would write and she would talk and she would send little things, little snippets of poetry and prose and stuff that was coming up. And finally around October, and he disappeared in July of that year, October, November, I said to her, you know, why don't we just get together and let's just write. You wanted to do a meditation project. Let's write a healing project for you. Let's take all of the stuff that you're feeling and thinking and see what comes out. And there's nothing like music to help you process what you're going through. And as it turns out, we didn't end up putting much of her sorrow into that project, but rather more it was about the intention of healing. And when we decided on the chakra cycle, the songs kind of presented themselves, and really the cornerstone of the record is Grace and Gratitude, because really gratitude was Olivia's religion. And that's how she got through breast cancer. That's how she got through all of the traumatic events in her life.
I've been doing the podcast now for over nearly 2 years, and I was in conversation, I'm sure you know Michael Caprio, her publicist, and I was in conversation with him to interview her for the podcast, and then she was very, as we know, very sadly passed. So I actually did a tribute to Olivia with Michael as my guest interviewing him. So yeah, so that's when I remember looking at the album and speaking to him, and he reminded me of you. And I was like, I want to interview Amy as well for the podcast. So Amy, let's go back to you and your journey. What's up next in your world? What's coming up in the foreseeable future?
Coming up, I'm starting a tour with my husband, Mark, and we put out a duet album a couple of years ago. And we're finally, things in Canada got really, really slowed down from COVID in terms of the venues being available for touring. So now it's 2 years after the record's out and we're finally able to get out there and do the duet album live. So that's going to be really fun. But what's even more fun for us is our son, Ezra Jordan, is joining us on the tour for the first time ever. We've done so little work with our kids over the years because, you know, we wanted to be parents and do their thing. But the time is right for Ezra. He's going to be in the band accompanying us on our songs, and then he's going to do his own solo set and sing backups with us. And the sound of three family voices together is just, it's a great sound. You know, there's been lots of family bands and it's a special sound. And that's what's happening with performing. In terms of writing, the last project that I did with Olivia was the Live On album with Olivia and Beth Nielsen Chapman.
Yes.
And those were all songs that the three of us wrote to process loss and how you can transform you know, your grief into a healing journey. And so we didn't know, of course, when we started that project, writing it in 2014, that we would lose Olivia in 2022. She was not sick at all at that time. But the last day of our tour in 2018, she divulged to us that she'd been re-diagnosed with cancer. And it became clear that, you know, she wasn't going to be able to perform again. And when we toured the Live On Project, we toured in Europe, we toured in the States, we toured in Canada, and everywhere we toured, I was so taken aback with the energy that was created in the audience, because that show was the whole album top to bottom with a few little solo, you know, songs in between. And we created this kind of sacred space for the audience to really share their own grieving journey, the transformation that's possible from grieving journey. And so I wanted to take those songs and put them on the Broadway stage and write a Broadway show. And so I wrote a narrative that was inspired by the different topics in the songs. But soon after I wrote the story, it became obvious that the pre-written songs, they just weren't going to serve as a jukebox musical. So I told Olivia and Beth, first I told them, I'm going to try and do this. And then I said, you know what? This album's going to be the inspiration. I want to create the same feeling in the audience that we had when we were touring. But I've written completely new original music with my partner, Stephen McKinnon, who also wrote Love Is Letting Go of Fear with me for Olivia on Grace and Gratitude. And that's what I've been working on for the past 5 years. It's gone really quickly. We're very hopefully that this year we're going to get to present to theater owners and see if we can get a producing partner for the project. But that's where my focus is on now, the musical, and it's called Beyond.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I'm so excited. I've actually got goosebumps as you've been talking. That sounds amazing. So now back to the tour. When does it start and how long is it on for?
So it's just in Southern Ontario in Canada. Okay. It starts May 1st and goes to May 13th, and there's 10 cities. And it's the cities, the best thing to do is to go to my website, amysky.com. And we start in Kingston, and then, you know, people that live in Southern Ontario will know the cities like Peterborough, Oshawa, Ancaster, Guelph, Milton, all those cities. And a lot of shows, 10 shows in 13 days. But it's going to be great. And we've got a 5-piece band with us. And Mark's going to do his, you know, a few of the audience favorite, his hit songs. I'll do some of my hit songs. I'm going to be doing Grace and Gratitude in the show as well. And doing that one just with my son, which is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And we're really excited about it.
So, Amy, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
Oh my gosh. Other songs by other artists?
If you can't think of songs, maybe just 5 artists that would you just push play to.
You know, Bonnie Raitt is always one of my all-time favorites. I absolutely adore everything she does. And we covered 2 of her songs on the duet album. She's just one of the greatest singers of all time. So anything Bonnie Raitt. I love a Canadian artist named Bonnie Vere, or some people like call him Bon Iver. His stuff is very cinematic. I just adore it. I love listening to instrumental piano music. And my friend Stefan Macchio just put out a new album called Myths, Legends, and Lavender, I think. And Stefan wrote Serenity with me for Olivia. We wrote Instrument of Peace for Olivia. We wrote Little Star of Bethlehem for Olivia. And he's the artist whose songs I took to write these Christmas songs recently. So I'm always happy to listen to Stefan Macchio. And then to be honest, I got to call out my kids, Ezra Jordan and Zoe Sky Jordan. I love their work. Zoe is very much like Mark in that she writes in word pictures. Her ideas to me are just staggeringly fresh, raw, real. She says the things that people are afraid to say in very, very brave ways. And her new album, selfish is just a revelation. So smart about what it's like to be a 30-something young woman juggling career and family. And my son Ezra has an incredibly soulful voice. He's got one of those voices that they say he opens his mouth and God speaks. You know, it's just, it's a very moving, beautiful, authentic, completely unaffected voice. And but it's technically an incredible instrument. So those would be my top five.
Lovely. I love it. So Amy, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I just want to thank everyone for supporting my more esoteric projects. I'm so gratified that people love the work I did with Olivia. I was in the fall doing a series of Instagram live concerts, and I'm going to return to them again. I love people to follow me on Instagram. I'm not so much on TikTok, but I do share a lot of my music on Instagram. And then when my show Beyond hopefully makes it to Broadway, come to New York and see it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.